So I looked at Hooters as a university.
When did you know you were funny?
Some days. Still not. Sure. I had two kids again, and then I was like, oh, I used to be funny. When was that?
Little love goblins come out of my vagina, and I'm going to be thinking about that goblin when I'm at work.
I'm going to start a charity foundation to pay fines from people who took their kids out of school. I'll like run marathons for it and stuff, and people are like, what's the charity? I'll be like,
Sharon wants to take her kids to Centre Parks on the cheat week.
And I like the word diarrhea.
That's
especially
great.
For a date. Like these people who fake phone calls and fires and floods, just be like, I'm so sorry, I've got diarrhea. So
and you're not going to worry about them messaging you again either. And then I go home and have missionary in a t-shirt after watching people at orgies all day. This is actually really surreal, haven't you here?
Is it?
We have met before though. Welcome to So Wrong It's Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming on. We have a few things in common.
Great.
Okay. Starting off, I am Canadian.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Okay, I'm really glad you don't know this. Because actually, when I was like learning some little details about you, like a little stalker that I am this morning. So Ontario?
Yes.
Yeah. My family is from Ontario, St. Thomas, Ontario.
No. Do you understand how big Canada is?
Yes. So just to give you Canada, like backstory.
Yeah.
So the family is from St. Thomas.
Yeah.
I lived in Edmonton for 5 years as a kid. And then we came back here. My brother went to University of Calgary. So I've been around, I know like Canada.
Yeah.
But Siren, is that how you say it?
Almost.
How'd you say it?
Don't worry about it.
Tell me.
It's much worse than Siren. It's Sarnia, which sounds like Narnia with more sandwiches.
How close to St. Thomas?
It is St. Thomas. So like
it is.
Yeah. So like there's St. Thomas is a county, and right next to it is Lambton County, and Sarnia is like in Lambton County. But in terms of how big Canada is, like I don't even know how to describe it to you. We're like, we would be like next door neighbors almost. Because Canada's massive, as you know, having lived in Alberta, which is like a 6-hour flight from St. Thomas. And you and I are like this.
How crazy is that?
Although even crazier, neither of us are from Canada because we're obviously white.
My grandfather was an orphaned refugee from the war, and that's how he ended up in Canada.
Oh, I thought you were going to say he was Indigenous.
No. He was like, you know, they sent kids off to Canada.
Gosh.
That's how the kind of Canadian bloodline stopped.
Yeah, many ways.
Great-grandfather, yeah.
And he was English.
Yeah.
So all that way back, you guys went to Canada. That's so strange.
I know. But yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
I know.
And do you ever miss it?
I don't.
No.
I didn't live in the beautiful prairies or any of
the postcard.
You know, the nice bit like you lived in. Edmonton, I think, is really beautiful. Not in the winter.
I feel like Edmonton gets a hard time when people about it. They're like, it's soulless and whatever. And I'm like, I was a kid, so I don't remember. But like you say, there's beautiful landscape around, but it's quite...
I will say this about Canada. Being a kid there is brilliant. And you were there at exactly the right time.
Yeah.
See, I think if you had grown up in Sarnia, which, you know, a few decisions
I just called
different.
It fucking Siren.
Sarnia's worse, though.
I wrote it down, S-I-R-N.
Do you know that there were men who came to make the sign and they spelled it wrong, too? So for a while, we had these giant letters at the border of the town that were spelled wrong. So, I mean, like, I don't even blink at you calling it Siren. It's been called so much worse.
You didn't react, actually.
No, I was like, we'll take it. Sarnia, teen pregnancy capital of the world. We'll take it.
It's small town vibes,
It's small town vibes, and I had a beautiful childhood. I really loved it. But I think that when you grow up in a place like that, and certainly if you'd stayed in Edmonton, you might not have had all the opportunities that you did. I feel like being here, you're so close to Europe, pre some political ideologies, you could go and live and work there and study there as well. And then you could just like be a citizen of the world. And in Sarnia, like a lot of my friends didn't even and still don't have passports. Like,
they just don't leave.
No.
And
that... For your personality, I think, would have become very frustrating. Like it did for me. I just needed to get out.
Did you know from young that you wanted to see the world?
Pretty young.
Yeah.
I just knew that I needed to live in a metropolis.
Yeah.
I think I knew that it was fancy. Do you remember the winters there?
I remember snow. I remember, like, my mom, not in the way of how sort of it brings your life to a standstill, but although you're somewhere like Alberta, there's an inside option for everything.
But if you were British and you landed, seeing
my
Canada,
mom was like, the adjustment was huge.
Yeah, it's really difficult. They're taking people who are escaping all types of difficult situations, and they're looking to emigrate or immigrate to Canada. And they're taking people from hot countries and being like, great, great news. There's space in the Yukon. And those people are like, what? Like, imagine coming from a desert and then being put in another desert, but a snow-style desert.
Yeah.
Just being like, what am I going to do with this? And they're seeing snow for the first time, but it's painfully cold. I have a girlfriend whose husband is in the mounted police. He's like a real Canadian mountie on a horse, but he works in these really cold climates. And she was posting pictures of her daughters at school. And I was like, do they make them go outside? And they said, well, there's no recess if it's really cold. If it's like minus 52, that's the cutoff. I went, minus? And that's not a different, that's not like a Fahrenheit. It's minus 52 Celsius. Is the cutoff where they will not send babies out for recess. Essentially polar bear food.
Did you tell her that we shut down the whole country when we get sleet?
Yeah.
Just like this much on the ground. National emergency.
Yeah.
My new Roman Empire is you at Hooters.
Mm.
Because that was part of your journey out of Canada, right?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
I loved Hooters. It's tricky when you do something like, you know, some of the past jobs that you and I have had.
Yeah.
And then you emerge as this really articulate feminist. People are like, well, then why did you work at Hooters? And it's like, well, because I was raised in a patriarchal society where women were marginalized and seen as sex objects. And I thought that the best thing that you could be was pretty. And I was 19 years old. Mm. And I had Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera on the radio. And I thought, if I could just get my midriff to a place that I can wear a belly chain and I can have skin-colored hair and hair-colored skin, I'll be the most beautiful, happiest girl in the world. And I was quite gobby.
Mm.
I was a bit of a comedian, I guess. I would say things that people found, like, off-putting or provocative, I guess.
Yeah.
And it wasn't welcomed the way it was with your friends. Like, I was weird. And I thought, well, maybe if I could be prettier or more gentle or more quiet or, like, the type of girl that people enjoy being around, I will have a better life. And so I looked at Hooters as a university, like as a real school where I would learn to be the right kind of girl.
Yeah.
And what I found there was completely the opposite. I found really fun, diverse, funny, like smart women who were very like-minded to me. And that was a big part of finding my tribe.
Yeah.
And it flipped all of the misconceptions, I think, that I had about feminism and about getting your boobs, like, not all the way out. A lot of people in this country think Hooters is a topless bar.
And it's not. Do they?
Yeah, they do. They don't know.
That'd be a great restaurant. But I mean, essentially, it's like a white tank and some shorts. It's not that exciting.
No, that's the thing. It's funny what you can do with suggestion.
Yes.
Because girls in most other restaurants and bars, certainly in the summer, are wearing less anyway. This is like a sporty, and I was quite corporate at Hooters, so I was involved with.
Because I saw that, because you were like, you became like an area manager or something.
Because I've always been very ambitious.
You're like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it to the fucking max.
Doing it, yeah. First, they let me do the chalkboards. That was a huge promotion. And then I started to train other girls. And I think it's because I was a woman's woman. Mm. I had a way with girls. I could motivate people in the right way. And people think that Hooters is all about jealousy and cattiness and women and tits. And it's really not that. So it was great. And I know about all how it started. It was founded in the same year as I was, 1983. And there were these business guys who had one of them had a secretary who used to run on her lunch break. And she wore the 80s sort of running uniform with those orange shorts and a white tank top. And she was always very clean and fresh looking and happy and positive and big white trainers. And they thought that's the look.
The chunky white socks.
Yeah. So that's what we wore.
Yeah.
And it was fine. I loved it. And then I moved over here to open Hooters.
That's so interesting listening to you talk about it. Because like you say, you do feel like you have to defend it in the way that people kind of, with the Monster Girl thing. I feel like the Hooter Girl, Monster Girl thing that I did, it's got a lot of parallels, like you say. And I think the things that people thought about it or my personal experience was not what people want it to be. They want me to say that I felt, you know, subjectified and all the girls were airheads and we all used to fight. And it wasn't that.
No.
And actually, it taught me a lot. It taught me, like, discipline. Mm. I made friends for life, traveled the world. Like, it gave me stuff at a time when actually I was the same. I didn't think that I had any value outside the way that I looked. And that wasn't because where I was living, like you were, you know, small town, that maybe made you feel that way. That was just rules that I put on myself because I had not found my thing. So I was like, oh, what can I do? Okay, I guess I look all right in a bikini. Let's give that a go. Mm-hmm. It's interesting how society wants to kind of sometimes demonize things that the experience when you live it is not necessarily that.
No, and we have to be self-aware enough to go, was I, you know, marginalized, objectified? Was I taken advantage of? Am I just not far away from it enough to see it? But I think it depends on your personality.
Yes.
So to be women like us who really thrived and who really loved it and saw it as powerful and saw it as inclusive. And then there might be other women who felt very differently. So, I mean, but also, and this sounds like victim blaming, so I feel bad about it, but it definitely taught me to carry myself in a certain way and establish my power interacting with men early, and men would treat me differently than they would treat some of the other girls. So there was one girl we worked with, and her name was Karen, but no one knew that because when she was getting her name tag made, she sort of whimpered her name and we thought she said carrot. So we put carrot on her name tag, and then she never corrected anyone, which, like, let that be a lesson in of itself. So everyone called her Carrot all the time.
She didn't have a carrot name tag.
Yeah. We were like, I was like, all right, Carrot, here you go. And she was like, she just never corrected anybody. And that was the kind of girl that she was. I don't know why she would want to come and work at Hooters. She was really sweet and really shy. And I would start tables for her because, again, I'm like high performance. I would want to take all the tables and get all the money and be as busy as I could be.
Yeah.
And I would start a table of really nice guys. I'd have a little chat with them. Great. Here your bear's great. Carrot will be right with you. And then I'd leave. And I'd hand the table over to Carrot. And within seconds, she'd come crying to me like, oh, they asked to buy my pants. And I was like, what? They were really nice guys. And I'm not saying any of it was her fault.
No.
But I do think that there are perhaps people who will take advantage in the world, and predatory people, and 100%. People who make a decision about you based off just energy alone, and doing the jobs that we did, you're no safer from these kind of people at the bus stop or teaching in a school, or we've learned being a surgeon or being in the police force. Like, these people exist in every industry. But I think when you put it right on the table, like, you and I learned how to be quite strong in our energy and confident out the gate, and then no one ever messed with us.
And then your experience is very different to maybe Carrot's experience.
Or Carrot.
Because I think people, well, men, or should we say people that are predatory, often, like you say, they pick their targets. Uh-huh. So they're probably thinking, Carrot's not going to stick up for herself. Let's take the piss out of her and slap her ass. We're not going to do it to Catherine because she's probably going to chin us.
No, let's do it to the root vegetable. Yep. She hasn't got a backbone. Not to say, and again, that's very problematic to articulate because it sounds very much like victim blaming.
100%. I mean, that shouldn't be the thing. You shouldn't have to, you know, be assertive to ward off predators.
There are, of course, situations where really strong, powerful, assertive women are victimized. Like, it can happen, but I just mean in like a 2-minute waitress situation.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
When did you know you were funny?
Some days. I'm still not. Sure. I had 2 kids again, and then I was like, oh, I used to be funny. When was that? I was rested.
But you felt like the second 2 kind of like sucked out of you for a minute.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I was in a funny family. I think I grew up knowing that comedy was valued, and having a sense of humor could get you attention at the dinner table if you were a child. Because when back from, you know, our parents weren't lavishing attention on us the way I do with my kids now. You had to earn it. Drag yourself up to the dinner table where everyone was smoking and drinking in your face and say something funny. And that's what would make the adults go, huh? And I loved that feeling of like commanding a room. Mm. So I was funny in my own family before I was funny anywhere else, though.
And were you funny at school? Like, would your friends, your peers been like, she was really funny?
For a time, yes.
Yeah.
And then for a time, no. And then yes again. So I think I learned about audiences. Like, oh, when we were very little, I was a performer. I did loads of musical theater. I always wanted to be the funny character. I did local theater. I was always funny.
Yeah.
I was never like the main girl. I was the best friend, which I loved, being funny. And then in high school, we all became quite upset. Yeah, and I'm my own daughter's almost 15 now. And I see that the best thing that you can be is ordinary. Mm. You just want to squeak by under the radar and look like everyone else and have the same jacket as everyone else and not be noticed and not be special. because being special or being different is being vulnerable. You're putting yourself at risk. So I went through that period where I was like, anything I said, you know, people wouldn't laugh because they were like, oh, I don't know if we should say that. And then I grew out of that again and I was funny again.
That's such an interesting, you speak about your daughter in that, just blending. Mm. I heard this piece of psychology once and it was like, the zebra in the pack that's got the different stripes always killed first by the lion. Because it's like, and we basically have that in us as humans. Yeah. The person that is like tall or small or, you know, talented is like going to be targeted. Mm-hmm. It's so shit. So did you go for a time where you were like, I know I'm funny and I think of a funny remark to say here, but I'm just going to think it in my head and not say it.
Well, I thought it was funny. And I had a few friends who thought I was funny, but mostly it was viewed as provocative and just weird, like different.
Yeah.
I was being the zebra. And I love animal metaphors. So what we do is also, it's supposed to make you feel sick and it's supposed to make you feel scared. And I don't know if you ever had that kind, like surely when you were doing your big outing on the big, big reality show, you must have known how vulnerable that was going to make you. You must have known the scale of it going into it.
Yeah, to an extent. At that time, the show hadn't reached its... So I think with series three, I think was weird because we were the last ones that had a little bit of naivety because I think everyone didn't realise it was going to... I knew people were watching it. I knew it was on telly. But I think if I'd known what we were coming out to, it would have been a very different experience.
And when you started to realise how big it was, did you feel any of those shameful, panicked, like, oh my gosh, vulnerable feelings? Because what our animal brain is supposed to do is like a zebra. We're supposed to be part of a pack. And when you take yourself out of the pack and you face the audience or the pack, you have a nice time and you do stand up or you do whatever you do. You're on Loose Women, you have your podcast. It's, you know, you're talking. And then at the end, early days of it, you're supposed to feel a bit of panic. Like, what? Why did I just do that? And that's your animal brain teaching you, like scolding you, don't ever do that again. Like,
because it was dangerous.
The lions could have got you then. Yeah. Don't do that again.
I suppose.
And I've never thought about it anymore.
No.
You probably don't either,
No, sometimes it feels so second skin and so kind of like in my bones that then I get that, you know, that feeling where I'm like, I'm too relaxed or that you know, that imposter syndrome where you think it's too easy. Anyone could do this, you know, and apparently that is the definition of imposter syndrome when something feels second nature and you think, well, why am I doing this? Because she could just do it. But that means that you're meant to be doing it.
Yeah.
Do you get nervous though?
Not anymore. And I miss it. I miss the zebra brain.
Not even before going on stage?
Definitely not.
Really?
And then I do miss it. I go, oh, it used to be fun to like puke in a bucket before. Like, it was nice. I got a like adrenaline from that. And now I'll be like having a conversation. We'll have some gyoza afterwards. Right. And they'll be announcing me. I'll be like, see you in 1 second. And then I'll just go out and just
do it.
Do it. Muscle memory. Although it's never like that at the beginning of a new tour.
No.
So my last tour was when my 2-year-old son was born, and that lasted about a year until I was nearly giving birth to my daughter.
Jesus.
And then I took a year off, and now I'm going on tour again this autumn. And that's, I'm sure I will feel nervous at the beginning, and I'm looking forward to that. I think it's a lovely feeling.
Exciting feeling.
Or maybe my animal brain and yours have just been like, fuck, you're not listening.
You're going to be
goodbye.
Fine.
they're like, our animal brains are done. They're like, you're on your own with the lions. Good luck.
Your road to comedy, you came over here with Hooters to open that restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were doing stand-up as like, was it more of like a hobby? Or how did you break in?
I came here to open the Hooters and I went back for a while. And then my boyfriend at the time wanted to move here to do comedy. He was like, it's the best place for comedy in the world. And we were gigging. We met in a comedy club. And so I was just doing it as a hobby. I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
I didn't aspire to be a comedian. I never thought I would be. I never thought I wouldn't be. It's just not something I thought about at all.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a nice hobby. And I started doing stand-up almost as an exorcism for the provocative things that I said.
To get it all out.
Because it was right next to the Hooters in Canada. Yeah, so I was like, I'll just do stand-up on a Wednesday. I'll meet some friends there. I'll say all the things I have to say. And then I can go back to my life and my real goal of being beautiful and silent. Yeah. And then I was like, well, I don't really want to move to the UK. My dad's from Ireland.
Mm.
He grew up in this like cottage in Ireland that everything was old. And I mean, I still feel this way about the UK and Ireland.
Yeah.
Like, things are old. and you don't fix them.
And small.
And small. You're just like, look at this beautiful listed church conversion. I'm like, does this mean I can't get Sky? Like, just fix it. Just knock it down and build a new one, which is what we do in Canada. We're a very young country.
Yeah.
Founded by your grandfather. And I didn't really want to come here, but I wasn't ready to break up with him. Mm-hmm. And I thought I might be missing out on something if I didn't come. And it was a tricky time because I was young. I missed my family and my friends. And I think I have to remember that sometimes because my husband, my now husband, has moved over here. And even as a 40-year-old, like he misses his family and his friends. And I have to take myself back and go, it is really tough to come to a new country. And at least when I was 23, I had a chance of, I worked in an office for all, I made some friends. I was young, but it's hard to make friends now.
As an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say it's a really bad thing to say when I'm in this job. And it's not when I'm going out making documentaries, interviewing people. I love that. But I hate meeting new people in like social settings. Yeah. I hate making new friends. Like I don't know what it is. I have those friends that, you know, they'll come to my house and we'll sit in silence for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I love that bit. When you get to that bit,
yeah,
it's hard, isn't it? What do you think, like comedy-wise, sense of humour? Your dad said that this is the, or no, your ex-partner said this is the place to come for comedy. Do you think the sense of humour is different?
Dad is an apt Freudian slip. I think that he was old and I had unhealed childhood trauma. I do agree. I think people, certainly, like increasingly, Canada is weird. Politically weird. They're quite easily offended.
It's changing rapidly.
It is.
Like, I don't know what's going on
over there. I don't know. And again, like, I've been removed for a long time, so it's difficult for me to comment on exactly what's going on. But people, it seems like they're easier to offend. And the little bits of stand-up I've done over there have been fun. They've been amazing, but it exists in the metropolis. But if you do stand-up in the slower towns... I didn't mean to say slower like that, but if the shoe fits, you know. And
My uncle's in Toronto. My dad and him, back in the day, they used to watch people like Eugene Levy do stand-up, you know. And my uncle was saying, it's changing. Like, comedy's changing across the world. What can we joke about? What can we not joke about? Mm-hmm. But like you say, when you then go out, further out, more remote, it's going to be even more.
Yeah. And that's like, I cut my teeth doing comedy in those towns.
Yeah.
And they just wanted to hear about, I mean, the most hack men in lumberjack shirts type of comedy. Like, I hate my wife, I drink too much. That was the kind of comedy. And I think it's evolved, but not in every town. And here, as soon as I landed, I was like, oh my gosh, everyone is so literary and everyone's so different. Everyone's alternative and it becomes not alternative and everyone's so smart. And now that we have social media, everyone in my DMs is funny. Everyone on social media is funny. People will be like a pediatric nurse, also just a part-time comedian, really funny. Like everyone takes the piss here. I just feel a lot more relaxed about comedy here. I trust people to get it. People, of course, still get offended, but it's easier. It's nice.
Nice. It's the, I don't know so much about Canadians, but I was just in LA and it's like, I think it's the sarcasm that sometimes like stateside just goes... And you can say something really like, I said a couple of things that were just like so obviously, because they were just so crazy. And she, oh my God, that's terrible. And I was like, no, that was a joke. That was a joke.
Yeah.
Just goes, we talk in sarcasm here, don't we?
It's very strange. Comedy especially, I think, is an amplified version of just how people are and how people talk. The way comedians talk in LA is mental. They'll just be like, I'm great. I've done so well and I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And they big themselves up and they're so relentlessly positive. And comedians here are so self-loathing and self-deprecating. We never say anything nice about our best friend or someone we really admire. Yeah. Like we just don't talk like that at all. And it's weird. And in America, you go on stage and they'll be like, what do you want me to say about you before you go on? I'm like, I don't care. And other people will turn up with a list of credits. Like, you have to say, he's been on Conan. You're going to absolutely love it. They will write it out and bring it. And they want to be introduced like that. And I just think that is sick.
What about the burden of being pretty and funny? It's a heavy crown that I feel like I'm going to say, I feel like I wear it.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting next to a comedian.
Well, luckily, I'm less pretty as time goes on.
I disagree. I
no, it's true. Scientifically true. Like, my iPhone stopped recognizing my face.
Oh, God.
It's true. I got it. Well, so certainly I established a brand of being really glamorous on stage and being unapologetic about feminine, you know, traditionally feminine qualities that I lean into rather than shy away from. So I've always done like hair and makeup, and I'm the best dressed person in the room. I feel like it's just respectful. If people have paid for a babysitter, they've come on a night out, I think you should give them like a Hollywood show. And I feel like it's almost drag what I do on stage.
It's great.
The reason that I always pushed for that, and I love to see other women doing it in stand-up, is because we will get paid more. We will get better jobs. We do a lot of corporate awards nights and gigs like that where the men can turn up with a tuxedo and they look like they are worth the fee that the company is paying to have you host quite an illustrious awards. Well, if we are going to get those jobs, we need gowns. We need hair and makeup. We need to match the level of expensiveness. Like, if you want to get the paycheck, I think you have to look expensive. I think that.
I could love that. No, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like I'm sycophantically, like, trying to convince you that, you know, we were separated at birth, the Canada stuff and, like, the Hoot stuff. Now I'm going to throw another one in. Like, you reconnected with your old boyfriend.
Did you do that?
Yes. What? Like, there wasn't as big the timeline gap because he was your child, well, teenage head boyfriend, right? Yes. And then you were doing Who Do You Think You Are? You were back in the hometown, locked eyes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to you because I feel like you're going to give me the real tea, because he would have had a child, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I am the one who is like, I'm just scared to death. But when I watch you with your daughter, especially on the show you did, the parental guidance, I'm like, oh, it's not that scary. And you can be really cool and you can, you know, get help and you don't have to lie about it like every other celeb. And
yeah, no, I don't lie about the help that I get, because if I didn't have someone watching my kids while I was at work, they'd be like chained to a radiator, and that's much worse. So it's like, people know I don't have family here. People see me out of the house.
Yeah.
So as much as I do have help, I haven't slept since my son was born 2.5 years ago, because the kids still don't sleep through the night. I sleep at the foot of their bed like a dog. I think to myself sometimes, you're famous. What are you doing here? I'm very hands-on, and you will be too, because anything that you decide to do, you want to do well. And it is this Western lie that women can have it all. I don't think you can have it all at the same time. And I think it's adorable that your husband would have had kids. Would he have taken them to Sunderland? Left them at the side of the pitch? Of course not. And I feel like my husband...
I just said that. Yeah.
My husband can detach a lot easier than I can. Like, by the ninth hole, he's forgotten he has a family. Whereas I'm their mother, it changed my body. I got really fat, which, again, I'm not supposed to talk about because it's a body-positive society. Fine. I don't look good with a fringe. Some people do. Fat doesn't suit me. I have fully figured friends. They look great. I don't care. It didn't suit me. I didn't like it. And I gained all the weight in my face and shoulders because I've angered God. And I gained 2 stone. And then I got pregnant again right away. And then I still get... And then when you're in the public eye, people do notice. There's a fat-shaming thing that was really illuminating for me to live. I thought, oh, I didn't realize the vitriol that's reserved for people who are not fitting in with this, like, ideal body size. Got it. I loved learning that. But also, even
a nice lesson to
No, I liked it. I was like, oh, because I feel like I want to connect with people. And this is a demographic of people that, oh, I get how mean the world is to you. I get it. But...
Well, but people just like, you're fat.
Yeah, which was fine. But they're angry about it.
They're pissed off that you've put away.
Like, I've been called loads of things before.
Yeah.
Like, ugly in this, ginger bitch, loads. this. But fat, people are very mean about that. And as someone who wants to connect with people and do comedy, like, I need to know what people are going through. So I loved it. But it is fair to say that as a brand, or like as a familiar face on television, an audience will need to get their head around like a different version of you. And then you can't give your full attention to the projects that you're doing now. You really can't. Not if you also want to be a really hands-on mother. And it can be done, but at what personal cost to your mental health? Like, it sucks for a while.
Okay. So, destroys body, check.
Well, I mean, I bounced back.
I mean, you look great.
Thank you.
Not allowed to say that either.
Oh.
It's on the list.
Look, I'm 40, so I can say it.
You can say it.
It's a great idea. I don't think that anyone ever regrets having kids, they're this magical blessing and a wonderful gift, but you will have a rough road if you are the kind of mother that mm-hmm. I am and you intend on continuing with the schedule that you're on work-wise. And to lie to you about that yeah. would be me doing but this you is like, a disservice.
This feels, I needed this. Because yeah. like you say, why do we tell women yeah. lies? Mm-hmm. Like you said, because when I'm thinking about it, like my brain, and I'm like, right, I'm here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I do not want to look away from it for a second because I'm like, is this even fucking real? This is my life. I don't want to take my eye off the ball. I don't want to let anyone else like jump in my seat. But then also I know if I had a child that's literally come, you know, his little love goblins come out of my vagina and I'm going to be thinking about that goblin when yeah. I'm at work. Even if I had a nanny, I'm going to be thinking, yeah. what if she talks or he talks or she walks? Do you know what I mean? I'm not there. It's going to fucking suck.
I thought before these two small kids were born that I would just throw money at it and I'd be like, it's yeah. fine, I'll continue. But you don't love them because they're not here yet. Mm. When they're born, then you're going to want to be around them all the time. And then you'll want time to yourself too. But but even if you give them to a nanny, they're screaming because they really do want you. It's really, really tough. But I still think you should do it.
I like that.
Because it's really worth it. But yeah, it's just important to be honest about it, I think.
Violet's really funny, isn't she?
Violet's my favorite.
She's didn't even take a beat.
No.
She's so you.
She's great.
But you said something to her in one of your shows. You said, when I had nothing, I had everything. Mm. And you started to get emotional. And she's like, oh my God, Mom, are you going to cry?
Yeah.
And I was like, the sass. I'm obsessed.
Yeah, she was good on
it. Was that a very different experience with her the first time? The way, was it just you and her and to the other two?
100%. I was young. I was financially very insecure, so I hadn't gotten used to little luxuries that I was used to now before I had the babies. Mm. There was no ball rolling, so there was nothing interrupted in my life. All of a sudden, I had this daughter. The relationship with her dad broke down really quickly, and then I had her all to myself, more or less. She still has a relationship with her dad, but day to day, it was very peaceful to be in charge of everything because it wasn't keeping score with someone else.
Yeah.
And if you have a husband, not only do you have to consider the audacity of his opinions, but you have to make space for him, like consider what he's doing, make space for your relationship also. And then if you do something and he hasn't maybe put in as much, I know my husband absolutely gives 100% effort, but to me that looks like a 4 out of 10.
Okay.
So I'm like,
this is so comforting to hear, yeah.
He also played football.
Okay.
But like American football.
Yeah.
And he's a he's a great dad, but a shit mom. With my daughter, I loved being a single mother, and I loved how empowering it was just to know that I had to do it all.
Yes.
And that I had no resentment. I didn't have to make space for a relationship. I could work and be with my daughter. And we grew up together in a way, and it was so wonderful. And she's an important point of reference for me because then I remember with the babies how fleeting the time really is. Yeah. So like I've been exhausted for 2.5 years. What's 2.5 years with the rest of my life? And very soon they'll be 15 years old rolling their eyes at me and it'll be gone and you'll never get it back. So
it's amazing.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's nice. You should definitely do it.
I'm thinking about it. I'm warming to it. It's like that thing you say, I think you also have to make peace with the fact that oh God, people love talking about like division of labor between like men and women. But it's like you say, even when Brad tells me he's trying really hard, it doesn't look like he is.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's making things worse on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's him trying to be helpful. And it's just really, yeah. There is a special place in hell for men that golf.
Yeah.
And I think it's men that enjoy sports in general, actually, is just fucking rude.
It is.
And then doing it as a job on top, taking the piss, to be honest. I will do it. I do want them. But like you say, also, I think there's a misconception about me, and I think my, you know, on social media is a misconception that I don't like children. Mm. That is not true. Like, do I love screaming children on a 10-hour flight? No, no one does, unless you're a freak.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say I'm like terribly maternal, but when I love something or someone, it's like you say, I will be obsessed.
Yeah.
So, and I know that about myself. So it's like, I don't have that feeling where I'm like, I could, you know, just pay for the problem to go away and just, I couldn't.
No, you won't. I mean, it is a privilege that is afforded to few. So like, just if you can, you should.
It's a good problem to, like you say, having to even have that debate that you have the option is something amazing in itself. Mm. It's just like you say, making...
And you might get a divorce.
is looking more likely as the days go on, to be honest.
I think about having another one and people
message
me.
Do you really?
Yeah, because I'm 40, so this is kind of like our last little chance, I guess, for the next few years. And if we're lucky. And people message me and they go, oh, you know, you're right, you never regret them. I had an extra one when I thought I'd had enough and I never regretted that baby. And I go, great. Are your husband and you still together? They go, no. I'm like, okay. So it's a balance for everyone. You have to consider them. If he wants one, think about the branding deals, Chloe. You know what I mean? Like, it's the right thing to do.
She does always tell me babies make loads of cash. Mm-hmm. So
get that baby working.
Yeah.
And you should definitely do it because you'll be honest with other moms the way I am.
Yeah.
And we need more voices making these women not feel completely gaslit when they're having a hard time.
It's hard though because it's, and this is not me shaming mums that I know, but it's like, there's that. It's just like that. I think we try to martyr women. It's like, you know, they don't want to tell people they have help because Twitter, they're going to go, oh, you are gross. Like, you know, but like you say, if you're on live telly or you're doing this, of course you have help. And your husband also has a job. He's not a stay-at-home dad. But they then hide it. And then they pretend to all these other mums that they're doing everything. And some of these other mums believe that. And I just think that's so shit because they're looking at you going, she's got a blow dry, she's got glam, she's got her own whatever brand deal, this, that, and the other. And she's doing this and she's making muffins. And I think, I know she's not because I know her.
Mm-hmm.
But I know her reasons for being scared to tell people.
Mm.
But then I just think we should just tell them and just tell them to fuck off.
Yeah.
Like I always say, and people sometimes will message me and they'll go, you've got these two massive stinky rescue dogs, but your house is pristine. I'm like, well, have a housekeeper.
Mm.
I don't like go hoovering 5-6 times. I just want to tell you that because that's the truth.
Yeah.
And some people get pissed off by it, but I'm like, I'm not going to lie and pretend that I hoover, you know, after they drag their shitty ass. No, I'm lucky that I have someone who can do that for me.
I think it's good to say I have all this privilege and I'm still finding it quite hard. Mm. So hats off to you. If you don't have this, then like you should be kind to yourself and understand why it's also hard for you. And 100%. I talk about my nanny babysitter all the time. My children speak exclusively Filipino. I don't know. I'm going to learn it one day. No.
Oh, that's fucking brilliant.
I love her.
This is my box of wrong. So essentially, I'm going to read you some statements. We're going to say if they're right, wrong, or so wrong they're right.
Oh, yeah. Like that.
It's all coming together.
Okay.
Taking your child out of school for a holiday.
I think that's...
It's a controversial one, isn't it? People get very angry about this online.
Well, I think it's definitely right. But is it so wrong it's right?
Maybe.
I just want to fit it into the format so quickly. I think it's always right to take your children out of institutionalized education. I think if you can, you should just not even have them in it in the first place because it is so much more enriching to be with your family and to see something and to go somewhere and to be part of that tribe than for what? For your family. Well, first of all, they hike up the prices of everything during school holidays.
Like double it.
Yeah. But also if I think any place who like what? If you're in a private school, they let you take your kids out whenever you want because you're paying.
Right.
If they're not on a scholarship, they'll just let them go.
Mm.
And if they go to state school, they're keeping them there. Why? So that, like, they could be custodians of the government? I don't understand. I don't get any of that.
It's weird, isn't it? And then now I saw they're fining. They'd now send you to pay a bill because you took your kid out for a couple of days.
Take your kids out of school, I think. I'll pay the fines. I'm going to start a charity foundation to pay fines from people who took their kids out of school. I'll like run marathons for it and stuff. And people are like, what's the charity? I'll be like,
Sharon wants to take her kids to Center Parks on the cheap week.
I think it's fine.
Scheduling sex.
So there was a misconception about me and my husband. My husband and me, rather. It's not my husband and I. It's my husband and me. Because you wouldn't say a misconception about I. You'd say there was a misconception about me. People pull me up on it, but let's try. There was a misconception about my husband and me that we scheduled sex because I said somewhere that we have sex twice a month, but we don't schedule it. What happens is I log when we have sex just out of habit from when we were trying to conceive. I like using the app and I still just log it.
So it's not before the fact, it's after.
No, it's after. I go.
Like those drink apps and you're like, oh, hit the booze last night. But
right.
You like, hit the dick.
Yes.
logged that.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's a drinks app.
Yeah.
But for semen.
That would probably do quite well, you know.
So I think scheduling, as a young woman who's been married less than a year, I think you should know that at a certain point in your marriage, should it last this long, you might need to schedule sex in a very...
Like, we should have sex this week because it's been ages.
Yeah. Yes. Or like, you know, we've got 20 minutes between like this school run and this. Like,
should we do it?
Yeah. Just because some people fall off the habit of doing it. And then you do it again. And you go, oh, yeah, we should be having sex more. I do think it's important in an intimate romantic relationship.
Yeah.
Because people message me and they'll be like, I haven't had sex with my husband for 8 months. And I think, well, that's your flatmate now.
So we're obviously in that early bit. So... And we're not seeing each other that much, but I want to just try and do anything in my house without being entered.
Mm.
Like, it's just, the sex is constant.
Fine. And what's the housekeeper think of it?
She just, you know, screams.
Could you put a wig on her and see if she'd be up for...
You know what, at this point, he probably, if he was to make a rash move, he probably wouldn't know.
Oh, God.
So wrong, it's right. Will you laugh at someone's unfunny joke if... You know, if someone's tried to make you laugh, should we, like, encourage people who aren't funny when you know they're trying to be funny? It's bad, isn't it? Because it depends who it is.
It's very subjective to the situation. If they're being, like, offensive or racist or misogynist to you, then you don't have to encourage that. No. But if they're giving it a go, and especially, like, elderly men, I think get a really bad rap. They're trying to tell their dad jokes. They're trying to fit in. Culture has changed so swiftly that they have whiplash. They don't even know what happened or why they're in trouble. I think they're so wrong, it's right. An old man can do anything, say anything in front of me. I know that he doesn't mean any harm.
Yeah.
And I will always make him feel seen and important. And I see the fear in his eyes, especially talking to me.
Yeah.
Like, there are men who are quite scared to talk to me. I was taking photos at an event, and this other man was like, watch her, watch where you put your hands. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not this like dragon.
Yeah, do you think there's a misconception that maybe like that you don't like men?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think
I don't get that from you, but I can imagine men thinking that they have to be super careful. But I know that I felt that's not your vibe at all, but I could imagine some guys being like, oh.
Yeah, or that I'm a dominatrix. Like, I get a lot of people in my DMs being like, will you please humiliate me? And I want to send you money to you. I'm like, I have money and I'm not mean. But they think that I'm the same as a dominatrix. For some reason, because I do roast comedy, I don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I'm fine with it.
Do you respond to trolls on Instagram?
So I've stopped, Olivia, because I think it's wrong to respond to
trolls.
You
think it's wrong?
Wrong.
Because they want it.
No, because some of them might be unhinged.
Mm.
And there was someone just the other day, I'll show you the messages now. He commented something mean, and he had a verified account and thousands of followers. And I said, who is this? And I looked, and he's like this prince, this like a sheikh's descendant or something who lives in America.
Right.
And he had all these videos watched by no one. So I think he's purchased his followers. And he's just talking about his life and his dog and what's going on with him and his helpers. Like his, and when they say helpers, that means you've got loads of staff. And I just thought, this guy's not well. And so I didn't respond to him.
Mm.
And then I started loving him. And now I really follow his page. Because he's quite, and I'm like, so he's got paid followers who aren't watching his videos.
But you're
and
watching.
I followed him. I watch all his videos now. I'm like, this guy's the best.
You're a fan.
But but I think he's quite.
What
he's
was the comment?
Just
or the message?
I was ugly. My haircut's bad. And he would know he has taste. So I need to change my hair immediately. I'm like. But anyway, it was
they
fine.
They always know, the trolls, they always know what's best for you, though.
They do. They're looking out for you.
Mm.
And, like, let them have it. So I am for entertainment, I feel like.
Mm.
And if you want to consume me, if it makes you happy to watch everything that I do and then send me really nasty messages, then you're still getting a service from me.
Mm.
And I'm happy that you're happy. Like, I really don't mind. But I don't risk it with trolls because you might hurt them and they're not as robust as we are.
Yeah.
So I don't risk it with them anymore.
Wrong. I'm really scared. I am a bit fake Canadian because I only did a 5-year stint, but it's like poutine. I wrote this one down just because after Siren, I was just like, oh, is it poutine? No, it's
poutine.
No, you
got it, but do you like it?
Well, I think it's right.
Oh, thank God for that. Yeah, you're
Canadian.
I think
it's delicious.
Yeah. So nice, yeah.
But you're so right.
Yes.
Explain to our listeners.
It could even be so wrong, it's right.
Yeah.
Really, when you think about poutine. So I speak French, so I would say poutine, but everybody says poutine, and you're fine to say poutine. It's all fine. It is very northern. Mm. Actually, it's just cheese and chips and gravy, but it's a specific...
But it's like in the North England, they love that.
Yeah. We just have a specific cheese. It's cheese curds, which doesn't sound great. It's a bit like halloumi. Horrendous, doesn't it? Yeah. It's like if halloumi melted.
Yeah.
But then we have like poutineries where you can put anything on poutine. You can put like Montreal smoked meat and mustard with your gravy on poutine. You can put like gherkins and like jalapenos and fried onions and mushrooms. It's just the best, the best.
Amazing. Right. Using your child as an excuse to get out of a social arrangement.
I don't know about that one because I think it's wrong. I think it is wrong. I feel like if your child is a genuine reason why you can't do the social engagement, then it's fine. But for work and things, if I can't do something for some reason, I wouldn't want a manager to be like, oh, she has childcare issues. I feel like that is the excuse, childcare issues. I'm like, don't say that because then they'll be less likely to hire a woman next time because they might think she'll have childcare issues. Mm. Like your husband's not going to be late for football because of childcare issues. So I think we should use it sparingly and only use it when it's true. And the good news is it's going to be true a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So that's why it's wrong. Don't falsely blame your child for missing something because your child will legitimately make you miss most fun things in your life. So use it honestly.
How are you just giving such an insightful fucking answer?
True.
That makes so much sense.
Just say I'm late. My God, you're so smart. I didn't want to be here. I don't like you.
Yeah, I just don't want to come.
Yeah.
My kid wants me out of the house. I just don't want to live.
Diarrhea is good.
Diarrhea.
No one challenges diarrhea. I have diarrhea.
I think Chloe would give it a go. She'd say, put a nappy on.
A nappy on. And I like the word diarrhea.
That's
especially
great.
For a date. Like these people who fake phone calls and fires and floods, just be like, I'm so sorry, I've got diarrhea.
And you're not going to worry about them messaging you again either.
I have diarrhea. Unless he's like a real freak and then he's like, great, finally.
Oh, yeah.
He's there's like, a date.
Wants you on the glass table and he's underneath.
Yeah. So I don't know what the game's like out there. I mean, it's you and I are married. We don't know.
No. I get to observe for the shows, but...
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because it kind of keeps me... I'm in the loop. I just don't partake.
No.
And then I go home and have missionary and a T-shirt.
Yeah.
After watching people at orgies all day.
Yeah. Nice.
Thank you so much for joining me. I loved it.
Me too.